this is Olivia, and you're listening to Bikini Drive-In. And I'm joined today by host of Femisphere on CKUW 95.9 FM, Mahala Kaf. Thank you so much for being here. Hi.
Yeah, no problem. I'm so glad to be here and, like, be able to talk about this movie, but also just, like, have a chat with you, too.
Yeah, I know. We haven't seen each other, or well, haven't seen anyone in a little while, so, yeah, nice to chat with you. So, yeah, so do you want to tell us a little bit about your show, Femisphere?
Sure. Femisphere is, like, an intersectional feminist radio show. At the moment, it is on hiatus in terms of, like, live recordings, mm-hmm. but you can be sure to follow us on, like, Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. But it's basically a show where we talk about news, headlines, talk to different people within, like, the community here in Winnipeg about what they're doing. So, like, mostly, like, women and non-binary folks and, like, folks of color mm-hmm. and, like, BIPOC people as well. Just talking about, like, events that are going on, like, topics that really pertain to, like, their lived experience as well. So it's something that I've been happy to be able to have to be able to be a part of for the past 2 years, but then now I've been hosting it on my own technically mm-hmm. yeah. for the past couple months. So yeah, hopefully can't wait to do that again in the future when things are less intense.
Yeah.
But maybe doing the whole recording, like, from, like, online and stuff like that could be a possibility, but fingers crossed I can be able to, like, have a face-to-face interview with people again very, very soon.
Yeah. And it's such a great show. It's so well researched and so well done, and yeah, hopefully you'll be able to have some new shows soon.
Thanks.
Yeah. So Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. And since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning and listener discretion is advised. Also, spoilers ahead. Today we are discussing Ari Aster's 2019 film, Midsommar.
What time is it?
9 p.m.
That can't be right. The sky is blue.
This is what 9 p.m. is like here.
Welcome and happy midsummer.
Unbelievable.
Let our feast commence.
It's like they're trying to make it gross.
What are they playing?
Skin the fool.
Skin the fool.
So we're just gonna ignore the bear then.
It's a bear.
Dude, of all the things to let me sleep through.
That sounds fun.
A couple travels to Sweden to visit a rural hometown fabled Midsummer Festival. What begins as an idyllic retreat quickly dissolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult. Mahala, what's your experience with Midsommar, and why did you choose this movie?
Funny enough, I think I'm a person that wants to get into horror movies and be that person who, like, watches all different genres, mm-hmm. but for, like, the longest time in my life, I did not, like, think horror movies were, like, really interesting to me, mm-hmm. but so this one, like, really stuck out. Like, I remember watching, like, those spoofs of, like, horror movies, like Scary Movie and stuff. And
oh, yeah.
Wow, so funny. And, like, so I knew, like, Scream and, like, I know What You Did Last Summer, yeah, like, all yeah. those classic ones through, like, a spoof of it.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Like, watching Scream maybe once in my life, but then with Midsommar, I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna watch, like, a horror movie mm-hmm. and, like, see how it, like, pans out. So I like, planned it out. I was like, I'm gonna watch it by myself. And then,
oh my gosh,
I ended up, and it was just, like, a whole experience. I'm like, I'm gonna be fully dived into Midsommar, because, like, mm-hmm. I remember hearing people talk about it and stuff like that, and, like, seeing, like, memes about it too, like, the different scenes within the movie, like, when they're all together and stuff like that, all the mm-hmm. women are, like, screaming together. I was like, oh, this seems so interesting. Yeah. I shouldn't watch this movie.
Yeah.
So, watching it was, like, really, really interesting movie. Like, I didn't expect for it to turn out the way it did. Mm-hmm. And, like, we'll get into more about, like, the specific topics of it and stuff like that. Yeah. But just, like, yeah, it's definitely a movie that is more than just what people may think it may be about. Like, even just the synopsis of it, I can't talk. But yeah, it's a really interesting, like, film, but also, like, thinking about, like, Hereditary, like, Ari's, yeah. like, last film, and how they're mm-hmm. pretty similar in the sense of, like, talking about, like, grief and things like mm-hmm. that, and, like,
yeah.
the shock factor of, like, how, like, not even, like, scary, but, like, the way he puts together films and stuff like yeah. that. So like watching Midsommar, and then I watched a bit of Hereditary before, so seeing both in different ways was really interesting too, to kind of compare them, but like they're very, very different at the exact same time.
They are very different, but they both kind of have this like sense of dread, and they're both very stressful.
Yeah, like you feel stressed. Like it's like a panic attack.
Yes, yes, definitely. That's definitely how I saw watching Hereditary and then Midsommar in the theater. Just like stress.
Yeah.
And I find that Midsommar is such an emotional film. Like we were texting yesterday and I find it so emotional and so beautiful, but I also like cry every time I watch it. Which is such a strange theme in like sort of more contemporary horror films, is that they're like they make me cry.
Because, you're expected to almost just to be scared and that's it, right? But not having your emotions around it. So to feel, like, the pain of, like, the characters, too, is, like, very... Yeah, that's how I felt, too. I felt so many emotions for, like, Danny and, like, other people in the movie, too. And just, like, the shock value of it, too. But there's more to it than just being shocked about it. But,
Totally. Yeah. So I just want to start sort of talk about folk horror generally, which is sometimes called occult horror. It's a subgenre of horror fiction characterized by reference to European pagan traditions. Stories typically involve elaborate rituals, deities, and remote rural locations. Some examples are Picnic at Hanging Rock from 1975, The Worker Man from 1973, V from 1967, and The Witch from 2015. And I have a quote here from an article from Film School Rejects, called The Unholy Trinity of Films That Gave Birth to Folk Horror. So the quote is, these tales are set in the countryside or rural regions and often present the juxtaposition between lush pastoral scenery and cruel, horrific terror. Folk horror is concerned with characters and communities who are located out of the way of urban environments. So along with the isolation of the community, the general uneasiness of the film comes from the fact that it takes place almost entirely during the day. And because of the time of year in Sweden, I think nighttime only lasts a few hours, and it's very disorienting. And there is a point at the beginning of the film, like once they first arrive to the community, where Danny asks, is it tomorrow? And sort of just like implying this uneasiness and like confusion, as well as how the time of day also shifts along with our horror expectations. Because you think of like sort of like classically scary movies, everything sort of happens at night, but this is like everything's out in the open and almost too bright.
Yeah, and too bright and like almost too beautiful. I'm like, this is so pretty to like think about. They're all gonna like eventually die.
Yeah, truly, yeah. It's very unexpected.
Like the colors are just so beautiful in a way that like they're in this really open, like beautiful landscape. Everyone's like wearing white and like offering things to them, and like it's just a very like it's not what you expect, right? Because when from a horror movie you expect like dark eeriness, like
and like any sort of shadow. There's like not even shadow in this movie.
Yeah, barely. Like I think like it's really hard to find like parts where you know like something's gonna happen in the future. Like this is gonna, like it kind of hints at something like later on in the movie, but the way it is, it's just like there's no like tight spaces, there's no like there's isolation in a way that's not like portrayed as like usually from what you see, right? Like, tight spaces or like even like dark. I think like even like if they are all wearing like dark clothing or like had like maybe even like a less way of welcoming them into this like commune in a way, like you like they're gonna be in trouble soon, but they're so welcoming and happy and like loving.
Yeah,
but you're just, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I know, it's very confusing because they seem so warm.
Yeah, too warm in a way. But with the whole like I didn't know that about Sweden, like the fact that like nighttime only lasts a certain amount of time. Like it's very short compared to like in North America. So that's interesting too, like playing onto that, like taking like inspiration from that specifically as well.
Totally.
It's like
It's cool. It's a cool element to it. And so obviously grief is a huge theme in this film. I have another quote from the JakartaPost.com. Article is called Midsommar, Studying Grief in Psychedelic Folk Horror Story. So filmmaker Ari Aster could have easily exploited Danny's grief as an obvious plot choice, an awakening to make her realize that something is wrong with the commune and that she has to flee as far as possible. Instead, Aster wisely chose to render Danny's grief as a more insightful portrait of human emotions. It's an elaborate study of pain that, if we allow ourselves to heal from pain, is an opportunity to alter ourselves and the pain into something more powerful. Through Midsommar, the director wants us to realize that in loneliness, we will need someone to help us to keep going, and who will show love and sympathy. This is something Danny doesn't receive from Christian, but at the end of the movie, when we see Danny wearing her floral crown and dress and smiling blissfully, we know she has found a feeling of home and family. So I think specifically like the idea of family and community culminates in the scene where Danny is really upset after seeing Christian in the mating ritual with Mia. And as she's followed by a group of women who breathe and cry with her until she's finally able to scream and grieve with them. This is like a very, this like makes me very emotional, this scene. And I just think it's so beautiful because like in throughout the entire film, she has been repressing her emotions to not burden her boyfriend and now is being welcomed and urged to release her emotions with the community. And it kind of like, she's finally not alone at that point.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's very like, yeah, when I saw that scene, it was very like, it's almost like full circle in a way because she started in the beginning of the movie feeling so alone and feeling so like she wasn't able to like be herself or like be able to be completely like open about her emotions, even though she was grieving like this very huge loss of like her sister and her parents, but in a way that was like not a typical death of like a family, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. Very horrific.
Very horrific. Like the first scene you see in the movie, like that just kind of starts the whole, it kind of like, yeah, starts the movie off in a way. It's like, if you know, this movie's talking about some type of grief and some type of like some type of capacity too. So like, with, and also like throughout the movie too, like you see when they first arrive at the commune, like her wanting to cry, but she has to like run off somewhere.
Yeah. Totally.
And like cry in a bush or like cry behind a tree, or even like when they're in the airplane on the way to like Sweden, like her crying in the airport bathroom, or like in the airplane bathroom, sorry. And not being able to cry in front of her boyfriend or not in front of anyone else and feeling so embarrassed by it. And then having to see like this part where her partner, her boyfriend is like potentially like quote unquote cheat on her and like betraying her. And then having these women like be together and like take care of her and like be able to grieve with her to a point where it's like, it's past like grieving it, but like they're also feeling that with her. Like they're just so like, in, like empathetic and like sympathetic of her that they're all like screaming and crying with her.
Yeah.
So it's very, yeah, very emotional and very, like, it kind of, like, you, I don't know, for me, like, it's not hard to watch. I think it's just, I'm just not used to seeing, like, people grieve in that way. So it's, like, something that's uncomfortable, but, like, something that I shouldn't be uncomfortable with. Because, like, oh, yeah, people can grieve like that. It's, like, that's, like, a normal thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally. And, like, I like how that scene is totally, it's just so different from the opening scene of her sort of, like, wailing and grieving with Christian, like right after she finds out that her family has died.
Yeah.
And there's just no connection between them at all. Like he just doesn't have the emotional capacity for it.
Right. Yeah. You know? It's a very like large spectrum of like of him just being not being able to like take care of her and like be there for her compared to like when she is with these women and like having these women support. It's just like, you can just tell like what's not even more genuine, but like what is more, how is like, this is how Danny will be able to be taken care of in a way that should have happened like early in the movie, but it wasn't able to happen because of like their relationship. It was already like such a, in like a, it was already crumbling at that point. Like you just tell like their relationship was not good.
Yeah. At oh all. My God.
So for him to like that relationship is just not great. Like so for him to even be able to like want to take care of her, it's like, it didn't even make sense. I'm like, interesting.
Okay. Yeah, totally. And yeah, just to go back to your point about how it seemed like the scene of her crying with the women just seems like feels very supportive and empathetic, where no one really has to experience these extreme emotions alone. I think like at the same time, no one is able to experience individual emotions. So Danny is simultaneously able to have an emotional release while being sort of engulfed within the cult, because as we see, there is no individual experience within this community. And I just wanted to know, like, what you thought of that.
Yeah, it's very weird, because, like, she can, there's ways of her to be, like, alone, but she's, like, never, ever really alone. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I was thinking about this earlier, like, when you're watching the film, like, you're obviously, like, watching, like, this thing happen, right? But it's almost like you're watching the people that are watching them. Like, you see how, like, everyone's just kind of, like, very aware of, like, these, like, potential strangers. So, like, Danny, Christian, and like
Josh the other, like, the other and folks. Mark, yeah,
yeah, like the other people, and as well, like who are there? Like you could just tell everyone's kind of like not comfortable with them being there, mm-hmm. and just like, you know, like they're never really alone, right? That everyone's constantly watching them,
right?
Like, seeing if they're like acting in a certain way, or like if they're not disrespecting like the traditions and stuff like that. So like with Dani specifically, like I feel like they could just tell that she was not in a good place. So like it's almost like for them to heighten that, like, of making sure she's like not even okay, but just like watching her a lot and like so she's not able to like, and she's like almost hyper aware of it too. Like she's not like, she's like, she knows she like can never really really be alone and like be able to mourn alone. Like even she goes off into a bush somewhere and cry, but like someone's always watching and someone's concerned about her, if it's like Pele or if it's like one of the other people in the communes or the other women that like are individually watching her.
Yeah That's interesting. Yeah, there's always a sense that they're being watched with the film. So I just want to talk about the death ritual, or I guess the ceremonial suicide that we see within the cult. So in a really great article about racial stereotypes in horror and the character of Josh specifically for graveyardshiftsisters.com, Mary Kay McBrayer describes the Etastupa, which is the ritual, the suicide and death ritual of the two eldest cult members as fundamentally immoral. Well, I don't really agree with that statement, because it's a death ritual with specific to this fictional sort of ancient colony. I do think that through a Western North American lens, it can be quite disturbing, since we're usually so removed from death as a culture.
Yeah. It's like, I was thinking, like, for the fact that, like, the fundamentally immoral part, like, I also don't agree with that as well. Like, I think in the sense that, like, every different culture, like every different place has different traditions in terms of death and how they perceive death and what it means. Like for us, death is like a very like sad thing. Like we like when you go to a funeral, you wear black. Like it's a very like emotional thing. Where in other places, I know that like death is a celebration and like there's like parades and then there's like people walking the streets and like dancing and stuff like that. So for her to like this like that critique of making it fundamentally immoral, it's like it's almost like a take on saying that like a tradition shouldn't be a tradition because it's immoral to like that individual person or that to another culture as well, right? Or tradition, but especially this is like fictional as well too, right? Like it's very interesting to have that take, but I think I agree that we're almost removed from death in a way. Like so like even when I saw that scene when they're just like jumping off that cliff and like
it's very like gruesome and like violent, but they still like consented to it and it's still like part of their tradition, right?
Yeah, like it's something that like we're not used to seeing or like we're not used to like fathoming, but at the same time it's like something that they consented to. This is something that's been going on for how many like years and decades, and like something that is tradition in the sense like it happens all the time and like it's so normalized to them. So why does it make it okay for other people to like judge that or like think that's not okay? And like I was also thinking about like the movie like The Farewell, which like I might give like a bit of a spoiler with The Farewell, but thinking about that movie and like how the main character is this Asian American girl from New York, but her grandma is from China, and like her grandma gets sick and then her whole family doesn't want to tell the grandma that she is sick, and she's like freaking out about like, oh, why don't you tell her she's sick and blah blah blah. But that's like just her like the family's tradition, like a lot of the tradition in like China of where like you don't tell, I guess not like not China, I'm not gonna generalize that, but that specific movie and that specific like family where you don't tell like if someone's sick, right? And like that's the way that's their way of thinking. So like I just kind of compare that too. It's like, because someone could call that fundamentally immoral too, right?
So, right,
like, you should tell someone they're sick and you should tell someone to like warn them, but like who do you to judge to say that that's not okay when that's been happening for like such a long time, right? Right,
yeah, totally.
Think about that duality too.
Yeah And speaking of immoral rituals, so we have the mating ritual between Mia and Christian. So Danny's deadbeat, pathetic slob of a boyfriend, Christian.
Yes, can we talk about that for a quick second? Like, he's trash.
He is the worst. And, like, treats her so badly. But also, like, he doesn't have the emotional intelligence. Like, it's kind of like, it's pathetic and it's sad, because neither of them are able to communicate. And when she does, he like flips it around on her and totally gaslights her.
Exactly.
And then makes her apologize because she's mad.
He is my enemy. Like, it's like a clear definition of gaslighting. It's like if gaslighting, there was like a a picture of like someone who gaslights women, and it'd be Christian's face, this character from this movie.
Stupid face. That poor actor is like, is he that he's just typecast to be like a terrible boyfriend from now on?
Yeah,
he did a great job because I despise him.
You did a wonderful job. You're doing amazing. You suck.
Yeah.
Terrible. Please don't do this in real life.
Oh god. Just like his shrug. The worst.
Like terrible to Danny, but also like stealing Josh.
He's a bad friend too.
Terrible friend to Josh is like he had this whole thing planned out to like study this pagan culture. Yeah. And he's like, nah, I'm gonna steal it from my thesis or whatever. And it's like, no, that's so lazy.
Yeah.
And like also just like so rude. It's like
he's a rude man. It is interesting to see that, like, oh, like, he's a bad communicator with his girlfriend. He, like, cannot communicate with his friends at all. He's just, like, afraid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is interesting, like, to go back to the mating ritual. Like, he's chosen by the cult to mate with Mia.
Mm-hmm.
The actual ritual itself, like, he's drugged by the cult to perform basically as, like, a breeding animal.
Yeah. Is very, like, there's small hints of it throughout the movie. Like, she have, like, putting her period blood in his drink.
In her pubes. In her pubic hair.
Her pubes in his body. He's like, why is there a pube in my body?
I love like, that. Just some witchcraft.
Yeah, just, like, cooking up a nice little spell to, like, you know, basically, like, have my children. Which is, like, you know?
And then, yeah, then they gave him, like, that special tea, and he's really out of it. And then, since this is a breakup movie, like, several reviews describe the sequence as Christian cheating on Danny, which I don't entirely agree with. Because, like, I mean, you're shown him sort of, like, paying attention to Mia or Maya throughout. But then in this scene, like, he's sort of drugged and coerced into having sex with her.
Yeah. Like, there's a small hint of, like, her, like, giving him, like, longing gazes and then mm-hmm. kind of, like, giving each other eyes, but doesn't really mean that he consented, like, to being, like, used as, like, a breeding animal and mm-hmm. to, like, use his body for her own benefit, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely, like, not, it's seen as cheating because Danny's so, like, out of it and not aware of what has been happening. But even him, I feel like, too, like, this when he runs out, like, completely naked and he just, like, looks so, like, out of it, like, mm-hmm. I don't think he knew what was going on.
No.
Like, at all.
No.
Right?
Yeah, and then, like, so she sees them in this ritual and then chooses him to be sacrificed without ever knowing that he was drugged.
Yeah.
Which I guess, like, I think that like, this complicates any sort of, like, villain-hero dichotomy, which we find in a lot of horror movies, but as well, like, in any sort of, like, relationship narrative, right?
Right. Yeah, because you want to, like, from the beginning, you're like, yeah, Christian's terrible, definitely, like, a villain in the movie, like, someone you don't want to, like, at all, like, mm-hmm. you have no sympathy for.
Yeah.
Or any type of, like, remorse for, like, you don't feel bad for him at all, because, like, yeah, he's been a shitty boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
he's been not a good friend, he's not been, like, supportive, he's just kind of, like, there.
He just, like, sucks in every way.
Yeah, literally. But then towards, like, this scene and towards the end, you almost feel like, oh, okay, this is not a situation that he wanted to even be in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and something that he would have never even seen coming, but at the same time, it's, like, perceived as, like, this cheating, like, scene, right,
yeah.
where he's meeting with this woman who is just, like, even that scene was interesting, just, like, her rocking back and forth, like, I feel it, and it's, like, no, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah, I don't think they have sex ed in this cult.
Yeah, no sex ed on the commune, like, just complete, just, like, no education at all.
I did, one aspect of that scene that I really liked is that it was about her.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, and, like, how a lot of the times, like, any sort of, like, discussion of, like, virginity or, like, having sex or anything, like, can be really awkward, especially, like, who wants to talk about that with their family, but then here it's, like, she's so, like, supported.
Yeah, by all those women. Like, they're all together, and, like, it's something that's, like, praise rather than, like...
Than, like, any sort of shame, right? Oh, sorry, I keep interrupting you. I'm just excited.
No, it's okay. But, yeah, like, a shameful thing of, like, mm-hmm. virginity and, like... Or, like, the concept of virginity or, like, speak with someone or, like, even, like, thinking about different, like, backgrounds of people and, like, thinking about... I know, like, for friends of mine who are, like, folks of color and, like, mm-hmm. women of color were, like... You could be 35, and if your family knows you're having sex, they're like, what? And they're like, I'm 35. Like, I'm a grown person. Like, or even, like, being in your 20s and, like, that thing being shame. But, like, I have, like, in this situation where it's so loved and beloved, mm-hmm. that she's like having this chance to have a like potential child or like mating with someone else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Other people are just like, don't do that. And I'm like, I'm a grown adult.
So yeah.
Like, no, it doesn't make sense. You're a woman. You should not be
embarrassed.
Like, consensual sex. And you're like, they're like, I'm like, okay, never going to happen, I guess.
Yeah. Guess we'll just never talk about it.
Yeah, or talk about it at all.
Yeah.
There's a couple articles that I remember that you kind of like mentioned as well, like throughout this too, but like there was the point, I guess, because I remember when I first watched it and then watching it again, the fact that like the people that are folks of color in the movie are mm-hmm. like are ethnically ambiguous. Like,
yeah.
It is Sam and her boyfriend.
Simon and Connie.
Yeah, those two. And like they look kind of ethnically ambiguous, but also like they're folks of color, but then also Josh's character of like a black man and like him being like them being all killed first. Mm-hmm. And like I thought, I was like, what the hell? Why does always happen in movies?
Mm-hmm.
Why can we never live?
Yeah.
Like in a film. But then like thinking about it more, it's like it wasn't like an intentional thing where like the actor, like the director wanted to just like get rid of them quickly enough. Mm-hmm. But the reasons why that they left is because just like good Connie and them being like completely terrified of this thing and like reacting so like violently to like seeing this like suicide happen, and Josh like trying to find information about this thing and being murdered for it, right? Or being killed for it. So it's like almost a play on like not the movie itself, but like the whole like perception of like when you see like black folks or like people of color in horror movies, how they're always killed first, not because just like, and usually just because just to get rid of them, because like all they're not like fundamental character.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie was more intentional, I feel like.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, which I didn't think of, like, I haven't seen that ever, like, even just in regular movies too, not even horror movies, but like usually it's like, you know, folks are like, okay, well, bye, and it's like, great, so I can't see myself in the movie for the next 35 minutes, or like, another hour.
Or they're there to support the white characters.
Exactly, like, they're, like, the best friend, like a comedic character, or someone that's going to help them along, but even, like, the white character's, like, so totally oblivious, they're like, what's over there? I should go down there. Like, no, you shouldn't, and they're like, no, I'm going to go down there, like, oh, God, don't do that, like, don't, you're going to die, type of thing, but, yeah, overall, the movie is a very interesting movie, and I think it's, like, almost made me, like, want to dive into, like, more horror, but, like, the...
Yes.
But not even just, like, ooh, I'm scared, boo, like, type of scary, but, like, more, like...
like this, where you want to be, like, stressed and sad?
Yeah, I want to be stressed and sad. I want to be completely stressed and sad, but I want to take the next 4 weeks to, like, process it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, whenever you're ready, we can watch another movie, and you can come back on the show.
Yes, please. I would love that.
So that's the show this week. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Mahalat, for being on the show. This was really fun.
Thanks.
So you can listen to Bikini Drive-In every Sunday at 4:30 on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Also, the show is now available on Spotify and iTunes. Okay, thanks.
Loneliness is the coat you wear, a deep shade of blue is always there.
Listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Our frequency celebrates diversity.